This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Well, good morning, everybody. Potentially one of the benefits of speaking third in a session like this is that you get to hear what everybody else is saying, and if you don't like some of it, you've got a chance to get back at them. I'm hugely disappointed this morning in that nothing that I've heard so far this morning I can disagree with in the least bit, and that is a bitter disappointment to me because I think, as many as you know, I do like a bit of controversy, but we'll see what we can do in the questions, shall we? And I'm not going to try to speak for too long so that there is a bit of extra time for questions, because I think that's really quite important at a time for this. Trying to speak at this time is actually quite difficult because we are in such a time of change and there are so many big questions to which we just do not have firm answers at present that it's very hard to put together a carefully honed presentation that really presents a clear picture as to where we're going, and things are changing by the day. In fact, even this week I changed my thoughts about a couple of things. So this is very much a number of my thoughts as to where we are now. It's not a sector view. It's not a view of the Association for Collaborative Provision, because we don't have a view from that organisation. We're very much a member organisation that comes together in terms of sharing good practice and ideas. So this is very much my views, but it's based on some 20 years of supporting HE in FE, and hopefully some of the thoughts that may come out of this may be of use in moving the debate forwards. There's four things I really want to cover this morning. The first is to try to explore a little bit about the nature of the market that we're moving into. And within that market, to emphasise more than anything the fact that we're going to have to be thinking now not about policymakers, but the primacy of the learner. And I think the day of many of the great initiatives may be coming to their end, not least because there is going to be a great deal more freedom to respond to the market, but also as there is much less money for initiatives. I think we all know we're hugely independent as a sector, but equally we have been known to do what policymakers want us to do if there's a large bag of gold associated with it. Well, no bags of gold, no policy initiatives, I suspect. The second thing I want to say is, and I'll elaborate on this, I don't think in terms of HE and FE, we should be afraid of fees. And I've got some evidence to show that I think fees should not be something that we're afraid of charging. But I also wanted to really frame this presentation in terms of a fairly major shift in terms of the policy direction in terms of HE and HE in FE, because the good Lord Leach developed a pretty strong direction that said we should be engaging much more closely with employers. Yet I feel that time is coming to an end, and it's quite interesting that for many conferences there's always been the token employer who's been brought along to show that we're serious in this. There is not an employer here today to fulfil that role. I think we are changing to a different time, from sort of subsidised employer engagement and subsidised employee CPD to one again where the individual learner is going to be very much at the heart of what we do. And I want to suggest a little bit about, finally, a new employer engagement agenda. But before I start on those various points, I just want to say that I think if you look at HE and FE, it's moved a terrific way over the last couple of decades. You know, it used to be the case that people were quite sniffy about HE and FE, and questions were constantly being asked about the quality of it. Was it really the sort of thing that the sector should be doing? Was it really a valid experience for learners and so on? Was the quality right and so on? And I sense that an awful lot of that sniffiness has gone. And I think as an element now of the higher education landscape, we've got something to be very proud about in terms of HE and FE. HE and FE has arrived, it's here, nobody's questioning whether it should continue. It's actually seen as a major way of reaching out to learners for the future. The questions about quality are largely gone. And I think we should be very proud that of this, and I think we need to move forward with confidence and clarity. I think also a lot of the niggling that occurred from time to time in the past about evil universities and hard done by colleges has to a fair extent started to evaporate. I think we recognise that there are a group of universities in this country who are fundamentally committed to supporting AG and FE, believe in partnerships and believe that they can add value to what a college can do. And I think there are colleges that recognise that their local partnerships are strong and supportive and helpful. And I think those are some things that we really ought to hold on to as important issues. And I certainly believe that collaborative working has helped move this movement on considerably. But in terms of where we're going now, is there going to be a market? I think for about 5 minutes I thought there might have been a market after the good Lord Brown made his pronouncements, and I suspect the good Lord Brown still might think there's going to be a market. Actually, I think there's going to be much less of a market than was envisaged, and I suspect there's going to be much less of a market than government would like. And I think in terms of that, we need to be aware of how we position ourselves and what is our market position in terms of HE and FE. And I think as we move now to a situation where it's about the individual learner who's going to be taking the loan, there's not going to be the hefty funding there and so on, we need to be very, very clear in terms of what is the market position of HE in FE. And, you know, I mean, and John, I think, articulated this very clearly with a lot of key points there. But I think if we distill this down in terms of what we actually mean to the individual learner, I'd like to suggest just three things. I think we are crucially important because we are local and we provide a university education to people who otherwise could not access one because of issues of geography, personal circumstances. I think we have a huge market position and one that should be promoted very, very strong, much more strongly, in that we are supportive. And if you look at the position in terms of many of our group sizes, the commitment of teachers to really supporting and nurturing students and so on, that is something that's very special and very precious, I think, in terms of HE and FE. And actually something which many of the, particularly the research-intensive universities, actually do very badly. And it's quite interesting that quite a lot of the grumbling that has sort of emerged in the broadsheet papers about the quality of the student experience isn't focused at sort of the HE in FE segment at all. It's actually aimed at quite a lot of the research-intensive universities, where actually some students get quite a poor experience in terms of the number of hours contact they get a week, and equally the kind of interactions they get with what they see when they join up as being world-famous research professors, who then they hardly ever see, and they're being taught by research assistants. So, you know, again, there's something we can be proud of there, and I think we should promote much more strongly. And I think the third thing that I think HE and FE has been very good at is actually providing courses that meet need. And those colleges which have thrived, those programs which have thrived, are those where that has been really carefully thought through and is really meeting need, either because there's no equivalent provision within a sub-region, or it's been really carefully designed because it's known that that's going to be what students want and it can lead them on to employment. And I think those are probably the three propositions, more than any other, that we really ought to be pushing very hard in terms of our approach to the learner. And that sort of brings me then to the next question, fees. And this is the big, big, difficult question, because none of us really know how this is going to evolve. And I want to come on to say more about it, so I won't say too much about it at this point. But I think there's an awful tendency in this country to use fees as a proxy for status and reputation. And we know that Oxford and Cambridge and Imperial are going for 9,000. They have to, because they couldn't be seen to charge less, because they are the high reputation universities and that high cost relates to that. I think equally in this country we can see that where you charge less, you are regarded as providing an inferior service. And I think we've got to be very, very careful about that one and think about that, and I'll come back to that one in a minute. For about 10 minutes after Lord Brown produced his report, I thought, this means the end to hefty and controls. We will all be free because it's a market, and basically we can recruit students as we wish, and goodbye hefty. Those 10 minutes rapidly disappeared. I think we will still see a very controlled environment. To a certain extent, I mean, it's almost sort of going to a quasi-market within a Soviet system in a way. We will be very strongly controlled in terms of numbers. I have no doubt about that, because at the end of the day, the Treasury has to find the money for the loans. and it looks as if BIS may have miscalculated how much it's actually going to cost. So I think we're going to have to live with caps and controls. And, of course, the other issue is the control in terms of the fee setting, the role of offer in terms of this, or whether offer won't actually do this, but, in fact, it then comes in terms of reducing the total number of HE students in the country. That's something I'd certainly like to debate a little after I finish speaking. So I think we are going to be controlled. And that really brings me on then to the question about indirect funding partnerships, because a lot of HEFE partnerships are based on the fact that it's an indirect funding partnership as well. And if there's not going to be any Band C and D HEFCE funding, there ain't any funding to pass on indirectly to an FE partner. And that is going to shift the balance of relationship, I think, quite considerably. But it also presents, I think, for partnerships, two very real dangers, and ones that I'm very concerned about, and ones which I think government needs to think about very, very carefully indeed. And that is whether the new regimes of control will seek to see universities who have had indirect funding partnerships in some way controlling the number of learners in FE colleges. I think that would be very dangerous and could actually detract considerably from partnerships and lead to a sort of a two-status environment where the bit of numbers you've got in a college which are directly funded, it's up to you to think about how you've done that. Because in the past you've had a HEFCE funding indirect partnership, you then get some that are being controlled by university. That seems to me to be utterly iniquitous, and I think it needs to be dealt with very, very soon and very, very firmly to ensure that colleges have got equity in terms of being able to respond to the market. The other issue is fee setting. And here again, I think there's been to date quite different practice around the country. Some partnerships have taken the view HE and FE is a different product, it's a different offer, although the quality of delivery is the same, the range of facilities are fewer, and therefore there's no logic in saying that a college must charge the same fee as a partner university. And in some parts of the country there has been a recognition that a college should charge its own fee. In other partnerships, the universities have sought to control the fee. Again, I think this is something very firmly that the colleges must be allowed to set their own fee within this market. Otherwise, you're getting, I think, again, significant distortions of the situation. So that potentially could produce some dangers in terms of HEFE partnerships. But from what I pick up, both from validating universities and talking to many FE colleges in partnerships, is that there doesn't seem to be a great appetite to actually move out of partnerships. And I think that's very encouraging. And I think provided that we can get some of these non-academic elements of fee setting and caps dealt with, there's no reason why partnerships should not continue to flourish, because I think they do add value. They do add support. And I think it's quite interesting when one looks at what the other alternatives are in terms of, you know, Open University Validation Service, EdExcel, the BPP are now quite interested in providing a validation service. There aren't that many people that have gone down that route, because although they appear quite an interesting business proposition, the amount of local interaction and academic support that they provide is actually quite small. And so I think we need to consider that as part of the overall context. But that may be something you wanted to debate a little later. But I did want to touch particularly about the issue of fees, because I think this is something that is worrying many college directors of finance. And interestingly, there seems to be, as far as I can pick out anecdotally anyway, a bit of a sort of north-south divide in terms of this. From many colleges in the south of the country, I think there is a sense that one's got to maintain the unit of resource and that whatever that takes must be done. There are some colleges in some of the metropolitan areas in the north where the current 3,000 fee is not being charged, and I think there's great worry about whether you can actually sustain a 6,000 or greater fee in terms of that. I'd just like to pick on a few little points in relation to this. Certainly to date, I think there has been very, very little evidence indeed of there being any advantage to any institution that has charged a lower fee. In the university sector, Leeds Met and Thames Valley went into the current fees regime by deciding that they would not charge the full amount. Neither university got any benefit from that whatsoever, and fairly rapidly moved to standardising their fee to what the rest of the country has charged. Equally, and I'll show you a slide in terms of this in a minute, I'm not sure that cheap fees in FE has actually produced any market advantage. Neither do I believe that there is much evidence to suggest that where a lower fee has been charged, it has actually encouraged recruitment, or putting up a fee has actually discouraged recruitment. And if you'll bear with me for a moment, I'll give you some facts and figures on that. The other point I want to make is that I think that, and there's an interesting HEPI report on this, which I'd encourage you to look at if any of you haven't seen it, which really highlights the fact that in this country in particular, being so status conscious, low fees are equated in the minds of students and particularly parents with low quality and low reputation. And I think and I really do worry that there is a potential danger that charging significantly lower fees than universities could lead HE and FE to be regarded in some people's minds as lower in reputation. I think there is a real danger in terms of that. The other fundamental question, which I think undoubtedly must be in the forefront of every institution's mind, particularly in terms of all of the other cuts that are on the horizon, can anybody actually afford to reduce the current unit of resource from where we are at present? I think in terms of taking any kind of a cut in unit resource at present is highly dangerous, not only because I can't see how people could do it, but also if you do reduce your resource, undoubtedly you're going to have to reduce some parts of the service, and I don't think that students are going to want to see that. They're going to expect a parity of learning experience. Now, we struggle in terms of being able to justify some of those sorts of propositions that I've made there, particularly in terms of questions about student sensitivity to the market and so on. I've given an example in terms of universities, but then people can say, but colleges don't work like universities. It wouldn't provide a useful model for FE. So let's actually look at some hard data from the poorest county in England, Cornwall. Now, in Cornwall, there are two main HE and FE providers. Interestingly, they exist only 12 miles from each other at their nearest point. They exist over 60 miles from each other at their furthest point. And I was involved with HE and FE in Cornwall at the time that the current so-called variable fees regime came in. And we had a very interesting debate at that time. Both principals have since retired, so I can protect the innocent or the guilty in terms of this. But one college was absolutely adamant. We are a high-quality institution. We have high-quality facilities. We must charge the full fee, not only to ensure that we can protect and grow our infrastructure to support high-quality delivery to higher education, and to maintain our position of primacy in people's minds as being a high-quality institution. Therefore, we want to charge the full fee. The other institution said, this is the poorest county in England. We have very, very poor people here. There's not the family money to pay for fees. We are adamantly opposed to raising the fee. We want to stay with as little as possible. And by squaring the circle, we said, well, okay, we will find a way in which this can be done. It started off as a very interesting testbed because each institution went down quite a different route to start with. But subsequently, the college that was charging the low fee recognised that they were actually being seen, as I was saying, as being of lower reputation and were losing a lot of money as a result of this. And I just want to present this graph. It doesn't actually say who the two colleges are, but I'll leave that to your ingenuity to work out who they are. But it shows here the fees in each of subsequent years for the two institutions. Sorry, the light blue is a little light here, but the left hand of the two clusters shows College 1 and the right hand shows College 2. College 1 maintained a high fee from the outset. College 2 started off with a fee of just over £2,000 and rapidly decided that it would increase its fee over a period of 4 years up to the same level as College 1. Interestingly, whereas College One's FTEs in HE grew slightly, the college, which started off saying we can't possibly charge our learners a substantial amount, but then changed its mind, actually grew its FTEs over those 4 years quite considerably. Now, people will say, well, Cornwall's different. Yes, of course Cornwall's different. Thank goodness. But, you know, I think there's hard data there that shows that I think the issue of low fees is not necessarily something that institutions should be afraid about. But because going with all of this, we've also got the issue of student expectations. I think students will consider whether they want to stay at home. They will consider whether they want to study in a local college for all of those advantages. But also, they're going to be thinking, well, if we are going to be investing all this money, what are we actually going to get? And this is a question just as much for universities as it is for colleges. But I think staff contact is going to be important. Group sizes is important. Showing that the program will actually lead to employment is going to be absolutely crucial. And that it's a good quality learning environment with good IT support, good libraries, good staff expertise. And that is what students will expect. And as John, you know, I so agree with you, John. If we go down the route of HE and FE being seen as some kind of a cheap mediocrity, that would be a very, very bad thing. And I don't think the students would put up with it. So we have got to think about this very carefully and think about what that will cost to do that. So that's my bit. That's my rant about fees. So I really want to move on now to Leach to Brown and look at this in terms of. I mean, I'm a glass half full person, but let's just start off with glass half empty. Or as someone said, there's a third category now: glass with a hole in the bottom of it, which is characterised by most Welsh vice chancellors. But there are a significant number of things we're going to be seeing in terms of change in policy now. This focus on the employer is coming to an end in terms of direct policy and financial interventions. Co-financed ASNs were held up as the great opportunity. I think they have failed spectacularly, and I'm not afraid to say that over the last few months I've been finding it even more difficult to find employers that want to put their hand in their pockets now, and it won't surprise me at all if we see that Hefke withdraw these as being a great experiment that didn't quite work out. I'm certainly sensing that as employers now pick up on the notion of a significant increased student fee in the current economic climate, there is significant resistance to paying considerably higher sums of money to pay for their employees' CPD. And status is going to be very important in terms of all of this in many employers' minds. We've, in essence, gone through a period where we've had subsidised workforce development for employers in this country. Because if you're a large company and you've got a big in-house training program at HE level, a lot of the big companies have actually benefited from this. It's not going to happen anymore. That's going to have to end. Bursaries have been a substantial failure, and I can't but fail to put in the slaughter of AIM Hire has been an absolute disaster, and it's interesting now they're trying to reinvent it. But I think we can go forward now in terms of a new way. There is going to be a continued need to interact with employers in a variety of manners. I think an enterprise focus in the curriculum is going to be a particularly important element in terms of that. And in terms of my final slide here, I think we've got some real opportunities. If we focus our employer engagement now on really showing how our programs lead to employment, that's going to be something very important for learners. That means thinking very much about our curriculum for the future in terms of employability and enterprise. And selling the fact very strongly that higher education does have a route onwards into employment. And I think we're going to have to be much, much sharper about a lot of that. And in that respect, I think getting employers into the institution, engaging employers in the delivery of the program and so on, are going to be the things that we need to be doing rather than asking them for a lot of money. So I'm going to stop at that point, and I talked for a little longer than I said I was going to, but I'm afraid I got carried away. But there we are. Apologies, Chair. Thank you very much.